Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Welcome to the Hollywood Casino Press Box with your host, Frank Cusimano.
Here's the pitch. Lines are there it is! Into left field! It's number 3,000! A run is scored! Musial ran first! On his way to second with a double!
The best interviews and the most informed insight.
And that's McGaffey breaking free, has a seam, and a crease. The kicker can't trip him up. Headed for the end zone. Will it be back-to-back weeks? Yes!
All tied together with the experience of over 20 years of local broadcasting excellence in St. Louis.
Now Stasny gets away from a check to Fabry. Wide open. Brower. Rebound. He scores. Trent Brower. The former Blackhawk has given the Blues a 3-2 lead.
Now, here is Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Good morning and welcome. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusimano with you till 12 o'clock. Got a good one lined up today. Adam Long, the only St. Louis kid on this side of the river to ever win a PGA Tour event, will join us at 10:30. 11 o'clock, Joe Micheletti from NBC Sports will join us talking Blues hockey. If you'd like to be a part of the program, we'd love to hear from you via the text lines from the great people at Winning Streak, 855-282-8255. Or Maryville University's listener line, 855-282-8255. Our opening monologue brought to you by Gateway Motorsports Park. Let's begin with lap one. The story of St. Louis sports. It really is. Number 91, Vladimir Tarasenko. He picked a fine day to record his fourth career hat trick.
Oh, there was a big one.
Tarasenko scores! Shows off his skill here on Star Sunday. The net today. Here come the Blues off the stick. They score! Vladimir Tarasenko gets a bounce off a stick by Saros. 4-3. Here comes Tarasenko. He'll bust in a chance. He scores! It's a hat trick on Star Sunday for Vladimir Tarasenko. And the Blues win it in overtime.
Yeah, obviously the three goals are huge. And, you know, he's feeling it right now for sure. You know, I thought he had obviously a strong game, scoring three goals. We had, you know, a lot of shot attempts. He had eight shots on net in the game. So he was a strong player tonight.
And that final goal, well, it can't be coached or taught. Actually, either could the first one. I mean, it was inside him the day he was born. What a moment. What a weekend. I said I'll take a two-point weekend heading into the weekend. Instead, they got four against one of the most talented teams in hockey. Besides the game winner, what was the next best moment? The Tyler Bozak backhanded goal? The fight by Pat Maroon Saturday? Jordan Binnington's 29 saves Saturday? You know, yesterday, Jake gave up four, but he saved 40. What a great stretch for the Blues. And how about Craig Berube? You know, when he was hired, I think very few of us thought he was going, you know, was going to do anything, was going to be anything but a quick stopgap until the Blues could get Joel Quenneville. I'm not saying the Blues won't talk to Coach Q. I am saying they may have something special in Berube. He is not Ken Hitchcock in a press conference. However, he's genuine, he's tough, and he holds every player accountable. It kind of reminds me of the Charlie Spoonhour press conference when he was introduced as the new head coach at UNLV. And it was very public because UNLV had tried to get Rick Pitino first. And then Charlie came to the podium and he said, "I know I wasn't their first choice, but I wasn't my wife's either." Maybe Berube isn't the first choice, but he may end up being the right choice, just like Spoonhour. All right, lap two. Let's get depressed. St. Joe's 91, St. Louis U 61. 37% from the field, 23% from three, 11 of 20 from the free throw line. And I'll tell you what, the 61 points is not as egregious as the 91 given up. What, did the Billikens think they were going to score 92? Yeah, we'll give up 91, we'll score 92. No, you're not scoring 92. You wouldn't score 92 against Chaminade. You'd score 92 in two games. Now, granted, St. Joe's was fired up, had a ceremony before the game. They were ticked off at the Billikens because of the way the last one ended. But still, don't forget your identity. You defend, you rebound, and you don't shoot 26 threes. Never. One encouraging item for St. Louis University, this Jory Collins from St. Mary's. Boy, I've been getting great reports about him from everybody. I haven't seen him much this year. I plan on seeing him in the next week or so. But he's going to be special. He's exactly what the Billikens need. Awesome passer, incredible ball handler, and a guy with a high basketball IQ. Billikens need that. Lap three. Mizzou. It is brutal. You just lost at home to a team that was 1-8 in the SEC. You got to beat the teams that are 1-8 in the SEC when you're at home. You have to. Now you're 2-8, just like Texas A&M is now. Look, in the end, it's about having, you know, as many good players on the floor as possible. And two of Mizzou's good players, probably their second and third best player, were on the bench. Mark Smith is still battling an ankle injury. And Jeremiah Tillman missed the game because he had wisdom teeth removed.
I mean, I've had wisdoms. I expect him today's basketball. I mean, but he's in pain, so that's what it is.
Wow. All right, something better. Illinois is now the best 9-15 team in America. They would win in a tournament right now with SLU and Mizzou in that round robin. They'd win them both. They beat Rutgers in overtime at home. Not that that's a great feat, but they're just winning games. Talking to Plowsy earlier, boy, if you just take away some of those catastrophic, you know, really bad win losses early, and with the way they're playing now, second toughest schedule in America. I mean, you can't even think about a postseason. You're 9-15. But still, they're the best team in the region now. They really are. All right, lap four. Non-sports thoughts of the day. Some things you must watch. Netflix, Ray Romano's stand-up.
I was at a red light the other day, and the guy was selling roses, you know. If you're married for a while, that doesn't work. Because they know where you got it. They're like, oh, thank you. Thanks for the effort. Thanks for rolling down the window. Here's my other tip. If she gets a haircut, you got to notice it before she tells you. Every 3 days, I say, nice haircut to my wife when she comes in. There was a woman yelling at this kid. And she looks at him and goes, I'm giving you to the count of two. I think we all know. Three is the number you give a child. I don't think I'm old. I just know I'm not young. I was having sex with my wife, and I actually had to take a knee, you know?
It's good stuff. It is really good. Then on Showtime, Saturday night, it came on late. I don't know if this is the first time it's aired or not, but the Teddy Pendergrass documentary. I'm not going to give away too much, but, you know, I can't get over this. After he was a quadriplegic, there was a time he wanted to kill himself. Little Teddy in the background. Only You, one of his best songs. But there was a time after he became a quadriplegic, he had that car accident in the green Rolls Royce in Philadelphia. He said, I want to kill myself to a friend, but I can't even do that. So his therapist, who was trying to help him, and who was also in a wheelchair, who was also paralyzed, developed a real connection with Teddy. And he staged a mock funeral where a bunch of friends and family came to Teddy's house, and they put Teddy Pendergrass in the middle of the room in his wheelchair with like a white sheet over his head. And each person would come up to the wheelchair and express love and how much he has meant in their lives. After it was over, they took the sheet off Teddy Pendergrass, and he said he wanted to live. You know what he did after that? He churned out 6 records, and 4 of them were gold from his wheelchair. Unbelievable. I mean, we think we have problems in our life. Could you imagine what he's had to go through, what he had to go through, and then to 6 records, and 4 of them were very successful from his wheelchair. Amazing how so many superstars in that era, or around our era now, died so young. Teddy was 59. Prince was 57. Michael Jackson was 50. Whitney Houston was 48. Elvis was 42. I think Marvin Gaye was in his 40s. Bottom line, if you get a chance to watch it or find it on Showtime, the Teddy Pendergrass documentary, it is compelling. There are some things there you will be shocked about. All right, lap five. Spring training about to begin. I'm going tomorrow night late, getting back Saturday. I'd love to go to spring training with no responsibility. I think I'd love that. I'd like to wake up, play golf, go watch a few drills, then go to Gumby Bay for the Mahi Trio. That's grilled Mahi, scallops, and shrimp, the wonderful salad dressing. Then I would take a nap, go to a cool restaurant for dinner. But it's not like that. You arrive at 7:30. You do interviews till about 9:30. Then you shoot video till about 1:30. Then you edit till about 4:30. Then you do Facebook till about 6:30. And live shots, then you leave at about 7:30. Then you do the same thing every day. Not complaining. I'm excited about seeing the team. What if Paul Goldschmidt becomes the NL MVP and Andrew Miller is the stud he once was? Mike Schilt, I believe, is going to run a really good camp. I think he's got this thing figured out where they're going to just the right amount of work, just the right amount of fun. He's going to make it interesting. Wondering where the drama is going to be in spring training. I mean, Dexter Fowler is your right fielder. I guess the closer issue is kind of up in the air. Maybe we won't even have a closer. Hicks and Miller just kind of split the job. Five-man rotation I think will be interesting. Now, here's the question for both of you and for our audience. If I give you this five, Michaelis, Carlos, Waka, Flaherty, and Waino as the five, would you take that as the five pitchers who will end up getting the most starts, or would you say, no. I'll take the other group? I'll take somebody else in that top five. Thoughts?
Ooh, excuse me, yawn there. I would say Reyes gets more starts than Wainwright. I think it's close, but I think Reyes does eventually get more.
What about Applause?
I just go by trends. I don't see Wainwright being a successful starting pitcher. I get you can isolate a couple starts at the end of the year, and you could say maybe he's back. But if you look at the last 3 years, I'm pretty sure in the four ERA. I just don't trust Waino enough. So I think I'm with Brian. I think later in the year, I think you see Reyes get more starts. But certainly they're going to give Waino a long leash.
I don't think they will. They have no. Last year, their excuse basically was they didn't want to bring up Flaherty or Gomber or Hudson because they didn't want to start their clock.
Now
Reyes' clock has started. So
yeah,
they have no excuse not to
ready
insert him.
For, you know, extended innings.
I think he will be.
I just don't like Waino being the number five all year, but I certainly understand why they're giving him a chance. But
I don't know. If he came out of the gates with three really bad starts in a row, maybe he gets four. I don't know. I don't think he'd get more than that.
I'm not sure he can afford to give him three. It's going to be a tight playoff race the whole year.
Well, I guess it depends how bad the starts are. You know?
You got to go five, right?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, if he's horrendous in three, like that Andy Bennis stretch, you know, where Bennis started his final season like that, he was gone. But Andy came back. So, all right. Lap six. Stream of consciousness. We are a great golfing community. Nobody does a better job than the Metropolitan Golf Association of putting on tournaments. And we have so many great junior programs. And we're going to talk with Adam Long very shortly, who won the Desert Classic. How about, though, at Pebble Beach, Scott Langley, the pride of Parkway South, was actually, you know, in contention to win. He finished 12 under par and is in sixth place. They're actually finishing up the tournament this morning because of bad weather. But, boy, that would just be... This is great. We're going to have two guys on tour off to great starts from the St. Louis area.
Did you see Phil's reaction to the horn of quote-unquote darkness? That's the best video out there right now. It's hilarious.
He was so ticked off because he was in such a zone, and who knows if he's got that zone again today, although he's got a four shot.
He got a cushion, but you could tell he just wanted to end it there and didn't want to come back the next day.
He probably would have recommended just turning on all those Escalades and the lights and put around the green. You couldn't even see. I mean, did you see, like, when NBC did not put the iris up and you actually saw how dark it was?
Yes. And I don't think the viewers realize that TV, you know, you can make it look a little brighter. Remember when Tiger won in complete and utter darkness? They actually showed the regular version of it, and it was pitch black.
Let me tell you a quick little story about Phil, and we're doing a shoot tomorrow on this. There is an outstanding businessman, an entrepreneur in town by the name of Ray Barrett, and he had trouble seeing the golf ball because he's an older gentleman, and so he wanted to put like three lines on the ball that would help him a little bit off the tee, to create just make it easier for him to see. And so it wasn't just like putting three lines on it. He went to an UMSL ophthalmologist, and they did all this research and development, and they put three lines on the ball to make it easier for him to pick it up when he's striking it. So they went to Jim Holtgreve, who's maybe the greatest amateur player ever in the St. Louis area, and they said, Jim, do you have a contact with Callaway? So Jim used his contacts at Callaway, and UMSL developed the ball, and they started making the ball. And Callaway, who is Phil Mickelson's company, went to Phil and told them about the ball. Phil Mickelson is using that ball this year.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. From Natural Bridge to Pebble Beach, that golf ball is being used. And Phil, by the way, is off to an incredible start. Not only this week, he was in contention in the desert, too. So. All right. Finally, I guess the major story of the weekend in sports is the news about Bob Costas. He was conspicuous by his absence from last year's Super Bowl on NBC. And now we find out. E60 did the piece. And basically, Bob, for years, and he said going back to the early 90s, would do commentaries talking about how dangerous football is. And then he did an interview on CNN where he said, you know, football destroys brains and football causes CTE. And so NBC, who's a partner with the NFL, knew this was not good business for them. So they removed the greatest sportscaster in NBC history from the Super Bowl because Bob Costas was, quote, telling it like it is. Here's some of Bob yesterday on E60.
The reality is that this game destroys people's brains.
Costas' comments went viral, and NBC, whose current contract with the NFL is worth roughly $9 billion, quickly distanced itself from its star. Bob's opinions are his own, and they do not represent those of the NBC Sports Group.
So I guess that NBC is not sure whether there's a connection between football and brain trauma. And I imagine the next press release is, it's still open to question whether or not the earth is round or flat. Okay, I'm good.
You had a viral moment this week.
Sensing a brewing conflict with NBC, Costas says he went on CNN to try to tamp things down.
I've been saying these things for the better part of a decade, and often on NBC. I stand by anything I say publicly.
But soon after, Costas says he was contacted by NBC executive producer Sam Flood and told he was being removed from the Super Bowl.
I think the words were, you've crossed the line. And my thought was, what line have I crossed?
Costas says he also spoke with NBC Sports Chairman Mark Lazarus.
And I remember reminding them of things going back to the 90s, of what I had done, what credibility I would have to comment about these things. And their reaction to that was, you're right. You're right. But this puts us in a position that's untenable for us. So you can't do the Super Bowl.
Wow. I tell you who looks really bad in this is NBC.
Is this NBC or is this a shadow of Goodell maybe contacting NBC or...
Well, I think it's a little bit of both, but it's NBC thinking that, oh, we can't get Roger Goodell mad at us. We can't do that. And Bob Costas is saying critical things. they're a partner with us, and we can't do that to the NFL.
It does speak a lot, too. Remember what Bob stopped by, because that Christmas luncheon at the 123 Club?
Yes.
And you asked him about the NFL, and he was kind of saying he hadn't watched a full game in over a year, and he has no interest in following the sport anymore, and it's just all bloviated nonsense. This makes a lot of sense after that clip and after the story came out.
And I wonder, too, you know, we're completely under the impression, or we were up until Sunday, that Bob was ending his NBC career. I do think it was Bob's idea to stop hosting the Olympics. He's done 11 of them. And Bob has always told us that he didn't want to be one of these, you know, 78 or 80-year-old broadcasters just hanging on. He wanted to go out on his own terms. But I wonder if the tie had to, you know, the ties had to be cut completely, or if this had something to do with it. Because now there are no ties at all.
No, and there wasn't even a send-off.
Yeah.
There wasn't even like a, hey, Bob's last broadcast, here's a 5-minute montage of all his great moments at NBC. Yeah.
They do send-offs. They do send-offs for Johnny Miller.
Yes.
And I think Bob's impact's a little bit bigger in the history of NBC Sports than Johnny Miller's.
Yes.
So I bet that had something to do with it.
It's unfortunate.
It really is, because it is arguably the greatest television sportscasting career of all time.
And he was the face of your network from a sports standpoint for decades.
Yeah. And it's not like, you know, he got into trouble. It's not like he was putting on negligee or beating up women or abusing drugs. He was telling it like it is.
Reference to another NBC sportscaster.
Yes, who probably didn't have a send-off either.
Who was, but brought back. But no, you're right. And it's weird that it wasn't anything he said that was incorrect. It wasn't, I guess, slander.
Yeah.
That's sad.
And as he said, too, I think in the piece somewhere, Brian, he said, this is not a bitter Howard Cosell ending of a broadcasting career. He's not trying to be like that, where Cosell just lashed out and ripped everybody. Because Bob said genuinely really nice things about his producers and his, you know, the presidents of NBC Sports, and said great things about him. He just, on this topic, and he's right on about it, did not want to hold back. So, all right, let's take a short time out. Before we go to break, quick word about Hollywood Casino. They're our title sponsor. And I'll tell you what, folks, if you get a chance in the next couple of weeks, I recommend going to Hollywood Casino and looking at that new hockey facility. 3 sheets indoor, 1 outdoor. They're going to be able to do concerts out there. It is really coming along. And we hear how slow construction is. They're going to be dropping a puck there probably by the end of August. The Blues will be holding their training camp in September. It is unbelievable. In addition, Hollywood Casino being a really fun place to hang out. We'll take a short time out. We're coming right back after this.